7654321.
You'll never have the sacred stone.
Oh, this you crazy mother.
Welcome, friend, to episode 21 of Color of Magic, the magic podcast where we try to raise the profile of some of our less fortunate or represented people in the magic community. I am your host, Daquan Watson, and as usual, I have my buddy Brian here. How you doing, man?
Doing reasonably decent. How about you?
Reasonably decent. That doesn't sound great.
Well, it's, you know, so the best I can come up with is reasonably decent. I caught the something, cold, flu. I'm not even sure which thing, but
man, yeah, you're getting it on the back end of the season. That's a little tough.
Yeah. I have three kids. I'm going to catch everything that goes around the school twice at least.
Yeah, I feel you, man. Oh, and before we get into everything, let's remind everybody that we do have our Patreon page. It's patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us over on Twitter. You can search Color of Magic, and we are there as well. But skipping ahead, why don't we talk about what we learned this past week? And I will lead off this time with...
All right.
Very interestingly, I've been kind of polling people as I've been doing more with my YouTube page and trying to create more magic content and trying to figure out what people want and what would be interesting. And oddly enough, it turns out that there's apparently room for a lot of beginner magic content still. And it's interesting because I think we get so caught up in, you know, tournament results and what's going on at the GP and what's the latest set and what card should people be investing in and all this stuff. But I guess it comes down to, like, in the last couple of years, as we've been getting all these new players from Arena and there's been all these new Magic ads and, you know, there's been these new store programs, maybe it's worked and we've gotten a bunch of new players and they've kind of gotten neglected in some of our content in some ways.
It absolutely could be.
Yeah, it's funny because I hadn't really thought about that until it came up multiple times. Because like I mentioned before, I have a lot of new people that seem to come by my stream over on Twitch, which, by the way, you can find me there on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays from 9 p.m. to midnight. Hey, all right, there you go. Pacific
nice
time, segue. By the way. Yeah, exactly. But it's interesting because I generally just help them out, and I hadn't really taken the time to think about, like, oh, well, maybe I should be the one providing more of this stuff. Because they'll come on and just ask, like, about a certain deck or what, you know, why people play certain things at a tournament or, you know, how to even work some things in Arena because they're new to it or whatever. And it's funny because I just assumed, I'm like, oh, there's like 20 decent videos on YouTube about how to build a deck for Magic. And yet I still have people asking me, hey, could you do a video explaining, you know, how you go from concept to a deck with Magic? So, yeah, maybe if you're a content creator, think about stuff for new players or approaching particular aspects of the game from a new player perspective, because apparently it's still a little bit underserved. Either that or I've just managed to keep finding all the new players. What I can't imagine is the truth, that those odds would be phenomenal. And you have boys like my friend Brian here, who isn't into necessarily super deep strategy. So just fun, quirky stuff is always good.
Yeah, I mean, I like to see, you know, just, you know, different things about, like, what people's process was, how they decided, okay, this is a deck I'm going to build, and kind of how they're going to test through it and see what fits and what they thought was good then turns out to be terrible.
Yeah, and it's funny because that makes perfect sense. And for whatever reason, it just hadn't crossed my mind, you know? And I see a lot of people making really good content. Like, there's people who do, like, new quirky decks, and they put up two or three playthroughs of those decks every week. You know, there's the professor doing his product reviews, and, you know, all this stuff is out there. Or, you know, even Megan and Maria doing just, like, the fun perspective of Magic with their, you know, flavor text stuff and whatever. Like, there's all this stuff out there, but I wonder how much of that kind of slips past the new players, because when you're new, you either don't know these sources are out there, or you're just looking for the basics. You know, what should I be doing when I go to a Grand Prix? Like, how do I register for a tournament? Like, what are the draft basics? You know, just like things that we all take for granted that we're making advanced content for, not realizing that, you know, there's a bunch of new players that have, and truthfully, maybe it's also that the content that's out there is 3 years old, 5 years old, you know, some of it is 6 years old, and maybe they just want something new and more relevant. I have no idea, but I'm going to try. So expect to see something from me by the end of this week, hopefully. But anyway, what did you learn, man?
You know, this goes back to a conversation we had a few weeks ago about cereal. And I was watching this excellent thing on the History Channel kind of about just, I think it was called The Food That Built America. Do you know what the first successful breakfast cereal was?
The first successful breakfast cereal. It's either like oatmeal something or grape nuts.
Grape nuts, yeah. The one we were like, who eats this? Where's the market for this?
Man, like, I don't know how I knew that was going to be it. But, like, if you think about it, grape nuts just feels like an old product. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, before they figured out sugar, before they had, like, colored dyes, they just had gravel and served it as grape nuts.
And back then, they were also trying to say, like, oh, this is really healthy for you, too. You know, they're pushing cereal more as a health food. Again, before they started putting sugar and molasses and things in it to make it taste good.
I mean, to be fair, grape nuts is probably great for you and, I don't know, cleansing your colon or something. But yeah, it's hard as hell to eat. That's all I know.
And I guess everybody in the 1800s didn't care if they broke all their teeth. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Like, who the heck knows?
No, I mean, it was History Channel. It was talking about the whole cereal war between Post and Kellogg. And actually, apparently, Kellogg had this sanitarium where he was producing cereal, and C.W. Post committed himself while he was there. He found their cereal recipes, stole them, and started his own cereal company.
That is crazy.
So had he not been losing his mind, he'd have never created Grape Nuts. So I always thought the person that came up with Grape Nuts had something wrong with them, and I was right.
That is so wild, dude. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think you trumped me this week. That's some odd factoids there.
I was just proud to see the History Channel actually showing something historical as opposed to Pawn Stars or, you know, American Pickers or whatever.
Or Ancient Aliens.
No, we love Ancient Aliens. It's true. Ancient astronaut theorists believe everything was created by aliens, including podcasts, probably.
Yeah, there probably is one somewhere. That's what those weird, like, sound waves we find coming across space. We'll figure out it's just an alien podcast they're trying to share.
They got Star Wars thoughts. That's what it was.
Or maybe they're just trying to download a cool podcast between galaxies, and it just takes a while.
That could also be a thing.
So, yeah, you know what else happened this past week?
What else happened this past week?
The World Championships.
Oh, yeah. That was a thing.
Did you watch any of it?
I did not get to see any of it. I was out of pocket.
Man, you miss... I will say... I don't even have a problem saying this, because I think other people will agree that this was by far the best Magic coverage for an event.
Okay.
And I mean, even though the format was kind of awkward as far as how they broke down the brackets and different things and, you know, to qualify people for day two or three or whatever, like, the pace of play was good. The commentators were good. The in-between vignettes were nice. Like, the interaction on social media was good. Just, they got it right. You know,
now that we got the format kind of figured out, and there's nothing, you know, really too, I guess, too Oko-ish, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, and that's fair, right? The format did help, you know, so you had some variety of decks to watch. And I'll say... there are still maybe some things you can nitpick here or there. Like, nothing's perfect, obviously. But so much of it was so good. I mean, it really was. And the commentators even navigated some issues because they had a outdoor news desk where it was in Hawaii and it got kind of windy for two or three different parts of the weekend. So, you know, they were dealing with that. They handled it like pros. I mean... There was just so much positive to talk about, man. It was really good. Oh, and the winner, which many people felt was a long time coming, was Paulo Vitor Dama de Rosa. This dude has been one of the best players, and even just regarded as one of the best players in the world for at least a decade, but definitely longer than that. And, you know, he was one of those players. It was always tough when you talked about who are the best players in Magic history. And nobody really argues that, okay, you have, if you were going to start building your Magic Mount Rushmore of players, you put Kai and Finkel up there. Like, those two spots, everybody agrees on. And then there's these other 3, 4, 5 players that kind of could be up there as those other two. You know, and I think with this World Championship finish and this last year's worth of results, that Paulo has to start really being part of that maybe big three discussion instead of a top two discussion. Because at some point, you have to acknowledge that this guy has done this since he was like 12. And he's been pretty good consistently at the top level since he was like upper teens, you know, and he's still doing it. So he's played against the greatest. He's that, or at least that we define as the greatest players. He played in that era with them, and he's played modern day and still been competitive during that entire time. Like, at some point, you have to look and say, all right, I mean, this is that whole thing when we talk about, like, basketball, right? Where people want to say, well, Jordan's just the best because he was this and he changed the game and all this stuff. But it's like, well, you look at the people before Jordan, you're like, well, is he better than Dr. J? Is he better than Wilt? You know, and then you look and say, are Kobe and LeBron even in the same discussion? You know, at some point, you kind of just have to say, yes, these guys are all badasses. Absolutely. And I think the same thing applies here.
How long would you say, I guess, the average Magic career is, would you say?
You know, interesting factoid is the average Magic player really only hangs around playing Magic for about 7 years. And once you're talking about at the pro level, there are some people that show up, have 3 or 4 good years, and then fall off. And then there's some people that, you know, give you a solid 10 years. And, you know, and then you have other people that are still really good, and they might have one good finish a year, but they just have other jobs or other projects or family or whatever, school, and they're just not dedicating the same amount of time to it. So for him, and I'll say this too, if you go back and watch his, I don't know if you want to call it his acceptance speech, his winner's speech, I guess, he talks about how, you know, he really has to thank his girlfriend, because even in this past year, you know, hell, he said even in just the past couple of months, because he's been away for a month plus just testing and playing events or whatever, and he missed her graduation. You know, there was Valentine's Day. Obviously, he wasn't there for that. Like, there was some other birthday or something I think he mentioned. You know, but he's given up all those things to be able to be at this level. And that's still, that's got to count for something.
Yeah. Because not everybody's significant other is going to be comfortable with that. So, yeah, definitely.
And that's a big thing. You know, I think it's tough whenever I see people who are put in position. Like, I don't know if you've heard of the rapper Lil Dicky.
Oh, yeah.
Love okay. Lil Dicky. Yeah, dude is great. But he was talking about that one time when he decided he wanted to start rapping and he knew he was going to have to move cross country. Like, though he really was into the woman he was dating at the time, he was just like, man, I have to make this life decision if I want to achieve this goal.
Yeah.
And it sucks, you know, but it, and to be fair, even when me and my wife got together, like, I was like, hey, look, I do these things. I'm running this business. These are the games I play. These are the events I go to. And cool. She was on board, you know, because, and I just knew, like, if you're not, this just isn't going to work. You know, so I feel for Paulo, for real. So it's awesome to see him do well. And no slouch in this discussion, by the way, is Marcio as well, who finished second. And it's funny because there's still some people that are angry about his past transgressions. Yeah. You know, so that came up for a few people, which, you know, we talked about last week. We knew that was going to be a case for some folks. And he played a hell of a match in the finals. The way they had it set up, is instead of just being, I think, like the last Mythic Invitationals where you had to win two and the person in the winner's bracket had to win one, you had to win best two out of three, and they had two out of three matches that you had to win. So they played three game sets, I think like four times till they decided the winner. Like, it was pretty crazy.
And I guess it's like it's almost like a Houston Astros situation. You know, whenever the Astros win anything again, there's going to be people that will never forgive them for stealing signals and will be suspect of anything they accomplish from here on out.
Now, okay, since you brought it up, I'm going to say, like, the whole stealing signals thing, that doesn't even bother me at all. Like, that seems like such a weird thing to be upset about. Like, if somebody's giving signals and you figure out what they are, well, of course you're going to tell the players on your team what they are, right? Like, why wouldn't you? In any other sport, if I'm on the basketball court and I hear their coach call out a play and we know what that offense is, then I'm going to yell to my team the defense to get into, right? Like, whatever. Now, finding out that some of them may have actually had, like, microphones or electronics on them or whatever, that's a whole different ball game.
Yeah, I think it's the, because people, you know, stealing signals has been a thing for the entire time baseball's been around. I think the level they went to is where the outrage is.
Yeah, that bothers me. When you're talking about, like, possibly wearing some type of communication device and people and the coaches talking to the players, and because, you know, like the beating on trash cans and this, that, and the other to give signals, like, that doesn't even, whatever. That's just creatively trying to figure out the opponent's strategy. I don't care. But having the devices, I think, is where things go real sideways. And if it turns out that's true, they deserve whatever punishment's handed down, which is probably going to be quite a few suspensions or probably even just being booted out of the league entirely. I would not be surprised.
And I saw already, apparently there are pitchers that are filing lawsuits, you know, basically saying, like, hey, you know, let's say I had to start against the Astros and that's what cost me my contract. I need to be compensated. So we'll see how that goes.
Well, I believe one of the guys that's actually filing suit is actually because he had a horrendous inning or two against the Astros, I think in a playoff game, if I'm not mistaken. And he, or maybe it wasn't, I think it was a high profile game. I don't remember if it was to make the playoffs or whatever, but after that happened, he was basically demoted because he just looked that bad, you know? So he's trying to play it as though if they weren't cheating, I would still be eligible for potentially X amount of dollars on these contracts.
Yeah, I know.
Now, granted, I mean, he might be right. Or then again, he might just still not be that good. And, you know, who the hell knows?
But hey, if a lawyer can make it stand up, we got, man.
Yeah, it's a whole crazy situation. Like, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, though. Yeah, so back on track with Worlds. Some interesting things. Like I brought up last week, viewership was huge. You know, once you had the event where all the name players were there, people from all different countries were watching, you know, big stakes were at play, everybody tuned in like we expected. That wasn't really a surprise. The numbers, I want to say I saw as high as 90K at one point, but some people told me it still went much higher than that. I mean, I obviously didn't sit for all, whatever, 30 plus hours of streaming or whatever it was. But other people told me it did tick up higher than that. So good for them. You know, that all worked. The other thing, too, is interesting to see. I did expect this, but it was interesting how immediate the effect was on Arena as well. So people kind of take those top decks and immediately start building them to play them.
Yep.
Which has been interesting because I went in going, okay, I'm going to assume people are going to play more blue-white. They're going to be playing more Wilderness Reclamation, mono-red, the Jeskai Fires deck, you know. And that's predominantly what we've been seeing for this, or at least this week so far. You know, I had two nights of streaming. And I think I faced maybe one Simic deck, one food deck, one mono-green, and I want to say, like, two homebrewish decks. The rest were pretty much one of those other four decks. which makes sense because, you know, they were on the big stage. If you're a new player and you don't know any better, you just copy those decks because that's what the best players are playing. But the thing I noticed is something I think players forget sometimes is that those players are playing very particular decks with a very particular set of information. They know who the other players are. They know what some of the other players are playing because some of the players were just playing their decks on their streams. And that's what they were going to play in the tournament. They're also making choices based on what they predict the rest of the metagame will be that they don't know. So some decks are playing like main deck Aether Gust. But that's going to be kind of bad when you're playing against other blue-white decks. So you just have this kind of like junky dead card sitting in there. It was really interesting to see how, like, I could almost see when people played certain cards, whose deck they copied.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny just to go like, oh, this they're playing this person's version of the deck or whatever. And that made it actually easier to play through. So I've been doing really well with Gruul the last couple of days. I think I went from Platinum 1 up to, I think, Diamond 3 is where I'm at now. So, nice. Yeah. So, yeah, whatever. And I think that's just a thing that's always going to continue. I don't have a problem with it, though. You know, there's some people still complaining about net decking and this, that, and the other. But the truth is, if somebody has already done the footwork and you just want to benefit from it, then great, go for it. Like, again, like I'm saying, in my position, I don't hate it because it allows me to already know what the other opponent's playing.
Yep.
Like, I already know what cards. I mean, I already know most likely the full 75. Like, they don't make any changes or variations. So that's fine. You get armed with that information. If you're a brewer and you like building cool decks, great. You now have realistically what I would guess 70% of the decks you're going to play against are going to look like. Go into battle with that information.
I once had a player tell me that he basically believes, you know, I guess there's what four categories that people fall into. I guess there's guys that are, or there's people that are really good at building decks. There's people that are really good players. There's people that are both of those things. Then there's people that are neither of those things.
And if that's you figured not far out from the truth.
And if you figured out that you fall into the category where you're neither a particularly good player or particularly good at building decks, okay, what choice do you have if you'd like to ever win games but to look at other people's decks?
I mean, the thing to me is, you know, I brought it up before. Like, when Elon Musk decided he wanted to build electric cars, he didn't start all over. I mean, we know how cars and combustion engines or whatever work. Like, all right, cool. You at least start there. People don't look and go, well, you know, Henry Ford did it with this style of wheel or this cog first. Like, no. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Or if you're, I don't know, you're a NASCAR driver, you know that drafting works and this, that, and the other, then you're going to do the same thing the other guys did. Yeah. Or whatever sport. Hell, football is a good example. Like, when people started running the Wildcat and having success, you saw the Wildcat run, like, at least once a week in every football game.
Oh, yeah.
For about a year and a half. Maybe two seasons, effectively.
Yep.
Then it kind of scaled back once everybody figured out how to defend the Wildcat better.
Yeah, it's like, guess what? They're not passing.
Yeah, and once that all came about, which is the same thing we're talking about, right? You now know what other people are doing. You can strategize for it. So I don't think it's bad. I think if anything else, it at least gives more people confidence to play games, to go buy cards, you know, whatever, because they don't feel as lost. Like, they feel like they have a better chance. And they'll probably win more than they would otherwise, but they still may not be great.
You're going to, you know, some decks just have, you know, better matchups than others. And when you draw your particular matchup, you know, okay, even if you're not the best player in the world, sometimes these matchups are going to be auto wins for you.
Yeah, for sure. And that's okay. Like, we all get our fair share.
Then, you know, you'll have sometimes where the just things where your opponent doesn't draw what they need or gets mana screwed. And hey, you've got, you know, you can get those wins while you're learning how to be a better player.
That's true. Very true. I did want to ask, though, who was your champion and how did they finish?
Oh, goodness. I don't think I ended up picking one.
What? How did you just miss out on free stuff? All you had to do was pick somebody and they were going to give you free things in Arena.
I know. I was I meant to, but then I got, you know, I think Sunday I was still trying to pretend I wasn't sick, and was then by Monday, like, okay, yeah, you know what? I'm down. I'm laying down now.
Yeah, because there was literally no losers. Like, no matter where your person finished, you're going to get something. I took the, like, got to go for the underdog pick and picked Chris Kvartek. He unfortunately finished 10th. But, you know, it's all right. I'm not hating. It's free, so, you know. And I heard some people already started getting their rewards, so by the time this is out, people probably already have stuff populating in their accounts at this point. But other positive news, we have a couple of good stories, actually. So, one, there was a picture going around. I guess they were doing something with MLB players where they're kind of going into opening day and, you know, they have boards with these different facts on there. And Hunter Pence, who plays for the San Francisco Giants, he had a thing up saying, okay, you know, I'm age 36, blah, blah, blah. But one of his things is when it, I think it said, like, I want to be or I would like to be, something like that. And he actually put a magic mythic mythic tournament champion.
That is awesome.
Like, I think it's great. You know, the fact that you have these big name athletes, especially somebody like, because Hunter Pence is a legit,
yeah, that's a world
top name baseball player. So, you know, he's making tens of millions a year. And he's still like, you know what, though? I want a Magic the Gathering trophy.
You got to figure he wouldn't get as nervous as a normal person. I wouldn't think he would, because, you know, the money, by comparison, is nothing to him.
Sort of, but, you know, it always depends on how people view it, right? Because there's a point where the money matters. And for a lot of Magic players, you know, if you had the opportunity to play in the World Championship or the finals of a Mythic Invitational or whatever, like, for a lot of Magic players, that is borderline life-changing money.
Yeah.
You know, if nothing else, it would at least solve a lot of immediate problems for people. But if you don't desperately need the money, like, say you already have a decent paying job or, you know, you've taken care of yourself or whatever, the money's just nice. At that point, you're playing for the prestige, you're playing for the trophy, you're playing to get that extra notch to get you closer to the Hall of Fame. And each person's going to value each of those things differently.
True.
And you can put a lot of pressure on yourself depending on how much each of those parts means to you.
I wonder what effect he would have on viewership also.
I think it could be big. You know, it's one of the things I remember having a discussion with some people at Wizards before is, you know, what type of scenario needs to be created so you can get more of these people playing. One of the things I suggested was, why don't we just, like, one of the things I wanted to do, and granted, this isn't anybody that stopped me there, it just never really came up to where it could happen, but I was thinking, like, we knew we had a couple of Seattle Seahawks players that played Magic or whatever, so I was like, why don't we just do a promotional thing where they come into the building, we set up a day, they can bring their significant others and their kids, and we just teach them all to play games or whatever. And they share the video, we share the video, like, people see them all playing, and it's awesome. Or in this case, why not set up some kind of fun, let's call it a charity invitational, where you go get the Hunter Pence's, the, I don't know, Vin Diesel's, you know, like, whatever, all these people that are into fantasy games and stuff, and get them to play a Magic tournament. But yeah, you know the eyeballs that would draw? Like, that would have to be the, at least in that time frame, the most viewed thing on Twitch, for sure.
I can see him going, I live my life one mulligan at a time.
Oh, sure, but we've had several actors that have been on, like, the Spell Slinger show on YouTube, yeah, and stuff. Like, round them up and get them to come play. Like, Gordon Levitt, like, he'd be all about it. Like, get him in there. Yeah. You know, there's several we could do. I think that would be great for raising the profile of the game. And you're talking about getting money in and getting sponsors and whatever. Like, that event would draw, for sure.
I mean, we see what Fortnite's been able to do with celebrity endorsements, so.
Oh, yeah, and they've gone as far as making special skins and all kinds of stuff.
Yep.
So, yeah, we have another positive story that happened. And we really didn't get to talk about this much, so I wanted to make sure we brought it up. But one of my favorite people in the world I've gotten to meet in Magic is little Dana Fisher. If you don't know who Dana is, she's a 9-year-old Magic player. She travels to a lot of events with her father. And she's usually dressed as Nissa. That's her favorite cosplay.
That's awesome.
And I don't know if I've shared it on the podcast or not, but I have a really fun story whenever I met Dana the first time. They were coming through to do a tour at Wizards of the Coast, and we're in the lobby. And Dana had an artist make tokens, elf tokens, because Dana plays a lot of elf decks, made elf tokens that have her likeness on them in a little cartoony drawing. So Dana gives me one, and I told her, I'm only going to take it if you autograph it. And I have a Dana Fisher token with the little kid autograph.
That is greatness.
Yeah, it's so good. So good. But Dana became, at Grand Prix Austin, finished 46 and became the youngest player to cash at a Grand Prix.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's great because previously Dana had set her goal at being the youngest player just to make day two. And she did that several months ago. And then it was just, okay, can I make money at a Grand Prix? And what's funny is there was a tournament, I want to say maybe, was this maybe September-ish, September, October? Maybe September, where she was playing in a modern tournament, and she was on camera, and everybody lost their minds because she wasn't playing an elf deck. She, wow. I think she was playing Dredge, if I'm not mistaken. And everybody was just like, oh, no, why'd you turn to the dark side? What happened? You know? But what's cool is she went back to playing an elf deck and did extremely well. 10-4-1 was her record for the weekend. And she got paid $300, 46th place. And I just thought that was just a very cool thing to have happen. You know, that we have this young...
$300 is like infinity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that might as well be $1,000. But one of the things that's cool is having this player who's 9 years old that can be an advocate going forward for younger players, especially as she works into being a teenager. Because who knows? She may be kicking all our butts at Magic by the time she's 14. Like, I don't know.
I'm thinking there's a strong chance of that happening.
Yeah, that may well be the case. But I think that's cool to be able to see these players. And I've seen Dana even talking with other young players that have registered to play these events. So there's other players being motivated by seeing her, or even other parents that are saying, like, well, if she can do it and my kid says they want to try, then I'm going to let them try, you know? So it's really, really cool to just have that player in our communities that is at least pushing that forward. Because a lot of times you talk about, like, kind of what's going to come of the future. Where are we going to find more players? You know, and obviously we have this animated series coming down the pipe and all this other stuff, but it's cool to have actual physical examples to say, like, this is somebody who's helping make that happen, and we're showing her success. So I think it's cool. Also, if you want to read, she did a full tournament report and everything. It's on Channel Fireball, if you want to go read that.
Nice. And you got to figure that's a record that has the possibility to stand for a very long time.
Oh, I agree. I don't know... I mean, I guess maybe. I mean, records are meant to be broken, I guess. But if we get 8 years down the road and she's still the youngest player to cash at a Grand Prix, I wouldn't be shocked.
For real.
And now, we're going to roll into our favorite time of the day.
Oh, yeah. Because I like to eat.
Now, one of the things that came out of this weekend, you know, we're talking about the World Championships weekend. It kind of brought up this thing, this behavior. It's just bothersome. And it's sometimes, I don't even know if it's some, like there's a sector of Magic players that are just always going to be overly judgmental of everything. It's that whole thing where we talk about, like, you know, if Wizards put $100 bills in booster packs, players would complain about which way they're folded. You know, and I think there is some truth to that statement.
Yeah.
But particularly, there were a couple of times throughout the tournament, I can think of a couple of scenarios with Seth Manfield and with Marcio Carvalho, where it immediately was a Twitter storm of people going, oh, I can't believe they kept that, or why did he make this play, or blah, blah, you know. But there are so many things at play that before those players actually get to speak or share their comments or their thoughts as to why they made a particular play, it could look worse from the outside than it actually was. And we're still talking about the best players in the world. So, you know, if they're going to make a decision, I still would trust them over me or you. And the worst part is, this is behavior that, I mean, it comes up in other games and other sports or whatever. So I'm not going to say it's just unique to Magic players. But every time it comes up, I question it. You know, well, I'll share this story that I shared with you, you know, pre-show. But I remember having this hand at a poker table. And this is a while ago. This is probably, man, I'm guessing this is probably about 8 or 10 years ago now. But I had a hand where when the turn card came out, I had a full house. I was pretty sure that the other guy had three of a kind with a mid-size kicker. So, and I'd played with this guy for hours. You know, I'd played with him on previous days, so I understood how he played and his tendencies. And I was 99% sure what was going on in the hand. So I'd already told myself, as long as a queen or a jack doesn't come on the river, I likely have this. And then sure enough, a queen ball came up on the river. And the only thing I was thinking is, like, the way that hand played out, I'm pretty sure that gave the opponent a higher full house. And, you know, I bet he ended up raising. I re-raised a mid-size. He ends up going all in. And we have pretty big stacks because we've been playing throughout the day. And it's the one time at the poker table I sat there for probably a full 4 or 5 minutes. And, you know, again, I had to apologize to everybody. It was one of those hands where I was pretty sure I knew what happened. But the problem is, mathematically, I knew I should be calling. But I was figuring in all of these other outside factors that I knew about the player, about the game, about the pace of things, the way the cards played out. Like, there was all these things that I was reading and going, you know what? I'm pretty sure this is where I fold. Though, if any of these things are different, 75, 85% of the time, I'm probably going to win that hand, and it's probably accurate. But I folded. A couple of people thought I was insane. They saw the other guy's hand. Then they thought I was a genius. But then I'm telling them, like, no, neither of those things are true. It's just a matter of, if we were to play this hand over, I'm probably calling. But the way things went, it just doesn't work. And I could see how if somebody, say that was a streamed match where somebody was watching that game of ours online, somebody would look at my hand, see my down cards, and say, that's a stupid fold. You call there every time. The percentages say this. I don't know why you're doing that. Blah, blah, you know. But in that moment, there are other things you have going on, other things I'm thinking about, you know. And I feel the same way where you're talking about why. There's a particular hand where Marcio kept a hand that had no red sources, but he had, I believe, two blue sources. And he had some other cards like the Goblin War Boss and some other stuff that he could play on turn three that would get under the counter spells and stuff that PV was playing. And he just missed. He didn't get there. He eventually, in his hand, he drew the worst possible cards. He drew giant five cost card, like back to back to back to back, right? Like as bad as it could have went. So people were trying to tear him a new one in social media. But the reality is, I get where he's coming from. Like, he has played for 3 days. He's in one of the final games of the final match that he has to play to win the world championship. He understands the percentages of how many red sources he has, and he has three turns to draw one and this, that, and the other. And it just didn't happen.
And like we talked about, a lot of those people, I'm sure, were kind of pulling against him anyway.
That's also fair, right? So he's probably getting some heat for other reasons. But being results-oriented doesn't mean the actions the player took were completely out of line. I mean, he could have had some other logic even beyond what I could see or whatever when I was watching, right? He he may have been thinking something completely different, or he was banking on a certain thing, or he may have figured that Paulo sided a different way, so certain things were going to play out better or worse. Like, who knows? But it's crazy to see people just going off the handle and acting like these people have committed some type of like cardinal sin. Because even if he's wrong, that okay, he made a misplay, he made a bad decision. All right, he's still going to go home with $150,000. Like, it's crazy to even have that level of anger and animosity or whatever towards somebody just playing slightly different.
Welcome to the internet.
For sure. And well, you've played a lot of games. Like, I'm sure you've seen that in other games as well where that's come up.
Oh, absolutely. And it's, like you said, like, I would, you know, trust their opinion far more than I would trust mine or even yours. And I have a great deal of respect for your opinion. But, you know, those, they are in those seats for a reason.
Oh, absolutely. And it's funny, you know, and we see it even in, like, pro football and everything. We're like, how did that coach call that player? How did, like, not realizing that there are 22 people on the field that are all seeing different things. The quarterback's calling audibles. The defense is shifting. The linebackers are changing their blitz cadence. Like, there's a million moving parts. So even if you call the right...
Somebody pulled their ankle and we don't know it yet.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So even if you make all the right decisions, the other person doing something can make the decision you made look terrible. Or in the case of Magic, like, the odds may just come up the wrong way, or your opponent draws perfect or whatever, and it just makes your decision look infinitely worse. And the funny thing is, more often than not, it's the worst players complaining about those plays.
Oh, absolutely.
That, I think that's what's always so mind-blowing. Now, if somebody with some clout and some history and credentials is critiquing a thing, I might take a second and go, all right, that might have been real bad. You know, like, but if you're just average Joe, who I see complaining about every single thing every week on Twitter, like, your opinion doesn't even matter. Hell, we have a podcast and I have a YouTube channel and you have a YouTube channel, like, and our opinion doesn't even greatly matter.
My wife reminds me of that every day.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so it's just one of those things. I think we just, as a whole, as a community, we got to step back for a second. Whether it's talking about somebody's play, a decision somebody made with their game store business, with an article somebody wrote, or whatever. Like, I'm not saying don't be critical of the things you consume, because I'm a big proponent of that. Like, I'm a believer that you should be even more critical of the things that you support. But at least question why. Or reach out to the people doing the thing to get better insight before just flying off the handle with an opinion. Because the truth is, if you're proven wrong or the other person makes a post and they're correct, very few people are going to come back and post the, my bad. You know, they're not going to put up their mea culpa and be like, well, you know, remember on Sunday when I said that Marcio's keep was terrible, where, well, he wrote this article and, you know, he explained it and it makes a lot of sense. He's probably right. That wasn't that bad of a play. Like, you're not going to see that.
No.
They're just going to be quiet and go on to complain about the next thing. And for our community, I don't think that's positive. I think all that does is create animosity. It just stirs negativity and nothing's really going to come out of it. Now, I think a good example is when you see people out there analyzing some of the stuff, I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. I mean, if you're really going to break it down and say, like, okay, this stage here, this is the play that I would do or would make sense, but, you know, the players opted to do this thing. Like, okay, cool. Now we're getting critical about the individual plays and the understanding, and, like, that makes a lot more sense because now we're at least turning it into a lesson. But, you know, it is what it is. If there's anything there, I think the takeaway is just stop and try to be less judgmental and just try to have better understanding of the thing you're being judgmental about. And I'm not even talking about just in-game. If it's just a person or somebody acting differently or dressing differently or whatever, like, at least take the time to go like, hey, yeah, there may be some positives to that. Or at least let me talk to this person and understand what they like about it, because I don't see anything in it. And at least have a better understanding about that topic. Because that's the only way you really grow as a person anyway, is finding people that know more or have more insight on certain things than you do. Open up your worldview a little bit.
You want me to let go of my confirmation bias? What's wrong with you?
Hey, man, for some people, it's hard. They're clutching them pearls.
You are gonna literally, forget about, you know, the Kim Kardashian of the world. You are going to break the internet with this kind of talk.
Well, if I do, so be it. I think it's worth it. But I think that's where we're going to wrap it up this week, with a little bit of positivity, just saying, hey, just get out there, be good to people, be less judgmental, and just try to understand more about where people are coming from. I think that's the lesson to take away from that.
If you may borrow from Jerry Springer, take care of yourselves and each other.
Exactly. So why don't you tell people where they can find you, Brian?
All right. I am DL Caesar on Twitch, YouTube, and Twitter. And our family YouTube channel is Allen's Ever After.
And as usual, I am Power Dragon, PowerDragon. You can find me on most social media channels. As I said earlier in the podcast, you can find me streaming on Twitch Mondays, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, 9 p.m. to midnight Pacific time. And you can find all types of cool magic-related videos over on YouTube. As a matter of fact, I added a couple of beginner videos to things you should do if you want to start your store. So that's becoming a series. And I just sent an email to line up my next store interview. So hopefully I'll have that up in the next 2 weeks or so. But other than that, let's call it a show and get this out there to the masses. So wherever you're watching, actually watching, no, I'm not streaming, I'm podcasting. I've been doing a lot this week, y'all. It's crazy. Wherever you're listening, whenever you're listening, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. If you have a chance, please check us out on Patreon at patreon.com/colorofmagic. You can also find us on Facebook at Color of Magic. We're also over on Twitter and Twitch at Color of MTG. And we have a website you can check out, colorofmtg.com. Please share our episode with your friends and help us grow our base. As always, every little bit helps, and we appreciate your support.